So, Thomas, what do we have in store today for the people?
Well, we've foreshadowed that there would be plenty of talking to warriors on the show. We got Ultimate Fighter winner and UFC fighter here to talk a little bit about that world. So anyone who's into that, as you know, me and Mike both have a martial arts background, so that was always kind of be built into the show as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Kurt Hollabaugh, as you mentioned, he's a tough winner. He won Tough 31, which was actually what they did in that season was they took former competitors on Tough and they brought them back for like an all-star, and he won that. So this is his third stint in the UFC. He is a lightweight. He is on a 6-fight winning streak. 5 of those are MMA. One of them was a grappling match. He is from Louisiana, a family man, a father, just an all-around, he's a good dude. If you're liking what Tom and I are throwing out there, please follow us on all the social medias, whether it is X, Instagram, Facebook, Patreon. Go like, follow, subscribe, do all that good stuff for us. If you don't want to do any of that, but you still want to show support, just give us a 5-star review on whatever platform you are listening on. That actually helps us out tremendously.
Appreciate all the listeners out there. Be sure to get in contact with us. Let us know what you think. Say what's up. Happy to interact with the community.
Yes, and we're trying to build one, so shoot us an email, or the best place to build that community would be on Facebook. And if you do want to get in touch with Tom and I, let's say you want to tell me what an idiot I am, or you want to maybe tell Tom how he can do a submission better, which I doubt you can do, but, you know, let's just say you had a suggestion for an episode or whatever. Shoot us an email, conspiracyandchill@yahoo.com. And we got listeners from all over the world. And for us being a fairly new podcast, I think that's pretty fucking cool. So let's take a quick second here, shout out some of the people that are giving us listens. We got people in Australia, UK, Spain, South Africa, Canada, California, Perth, Australia, Long Beach, Ohio, Georgia, Johannesburg, North and South, Ayrshire. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong, guys. Fort Worth, Chicago, Washington, Virginia. The list goes on. So we thank all of you guys. We really do appreciate every last one of you guys. What do you think? Should we let him hear our conversation with Kurt Hollabaugh?
Go.
All right. Kurt, my man, you are a UFC fighter, Tough 31 winner. You're a father. You're a family man. Overall, good dude. How were your holidays, man?
Oh, man, they were great. You know, that was one of the main reasons that I didn't really bug UFC too much to get me a fight before the new year, just because I wanted to spend the time with them. You know, I was going on the show for, you know, over 6 weeks, and I just wanted to spend my Thanksgiving and my Christmas with my family, my kids, and, you know, it was great.
Tough 31, you won the whole damn thing. How was it being on Michael Chandler's team?
And it was amazing. You know, I can't say enough good things about Michael Chandler. I can't say enough good things about all the coaches that he brought in. You know, Robert Drysdale, Ryan Bader, Jason Strout, even brought in Sean Soriano and Bob Cook for a little while. So, man, to me, that was the dream team. And that was exactly the team that I wanted to be on.
It was an entertaining season for sure. And you fought your friend, Jason Knight. How was that?
It was cool, man. You know, I've been knowing Jason Knight for a long time. We live probably an hour and a half apart, to be honest. And me and Jason, we met like back in 2012 or something like that, when we were actually supposed to headline a local show in Biloxi, Mississippi. So we've known each other since then, and, you know, talk to each other every time we see each other, even train together. Sometimes we all went to Alpha Male at one time and trained. So it was cool having him in the house too. And then, you know, me and him even said, hey man, let's try to get to the finals, you know, me and you, and finally do what we were supposed to do years back. And you know, it wasn't quite the finals, but it's the semifinals. It was cool, man. You know, we even said, hey man, let's go out there and let's give this show something special. Let's go do a Forrest Griffin, Stephen Bonner type fight, and let's leave it all on the line. Like, you don't shoot for a takedown unless you're hurt and need to. I don't shoot for a takedown. And I'm like, man, you're on. Let's do it. And you guys see how that fight went.
Dude, that's what I loved about it is neither one of you guys held back. You know, a lot of times in that situation, you see guys and it's almost like a glorified sparring session. But no, you guys were going after it, man. That was cool to see.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we both wanted to win. I wanted to knock him out. He wanted to knock me out, and we was both doing everything we could to achieve that.
This is your third stint in the UFC, dude. Did you ever picture yourself having three stints?
Nope. You know what? And, you know, after I got released from the UFC the first time back in 2013, I could see myself going back because, you know, I was with the management company at the time, and they were like, yeah, man, Sean said, just go get two wins and they'll bring you back. So I'm like, okay, yeah, cool. I can go back to UFC quick. So I go pick up two wins. And they're like, yeah, man, they want you to get a little bit more. Here, why don't you go fight in Titan? We just signed it. Here, we'll send you a contract. You know, win a fight in Titan, we'll bring you back. And then, you know, every time I want to fight, they're like, yeah, man, we're trying to get you back now. So I did think eventually I would go back. But then after I did go back, you know, I got the Contender Series fight. I won the contract, went back, got released again. I didn't even have any hopes on going back. I didn't even think about it. You know, I wanted to go to PFL or Bellator or somewhere like that. And just to see if I could make some decent paydays and grow in those companies. And then, boom, here's a third opportunity. And I'm like, I got to take advantage, man, because I never thought I'd have this opportunity in the first place.
That second stint, dude, they didn't do you no favors. I mean, they gave you a murderer's row, right? I mean, yep. Hani Rosellas, Burgos, Moises, Thiago Moises. I mean, dude, fucking murderer's row, dude. You're a super entertaining fighter, man. Are you still at Team Juco South?
Yeah, I'm still here. I have my two gyms that is also part of that gym. And I have a bunch of guys that I train at. I got some pros, got some amateurs that we train it with every day. But yeah, we got a bunch of gyms out here that we're all teammates and friends, and we always get together and we get some good rounds up.
Do you train any kind of catch wrestling or any like unorthodox, out of the box?
Not really. You know, I don't have any real wrestling background. I first started training martial arts in like 2007. And it was actually just no-gi jiu-jitsu and MMA stuff. And then I ventured into gi, and since I opened my gyms, I do a lot of gi now for the last 10 years. But as far as just any kind of freestyle or catch wrestling, I never have. And I still don't do a whole bunch. I got some guys that did wrestle in my gym, and they do wrestling classes. And, you know, I mess around with them sometimes, but not for the most part.
I always thought it was interesting when dudes have a background that basically is just straight into MMA. Like, that makes for a pretty unique approach, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. And really, you see a lot of guys coming out now that, you know, if you're up north, maybe they have wrestling programs, but like down here in the South, and especially in Louisiana, there's not a whole bunch of wrestling programs to even do. So, you know, you have to find something like an MMA gym or some jiu-jitsu or something to start out at.
Honestly, and I mean, obviously everyone in the earlier days of MMA was kind of specialists in things. What would you say you gravitated towards more so, like when you were starting to fight?
I think definitely my jiu-jitsu. And I think it's just for the fact that, you know, before I ever stepped foot into any kind of MMA gym, I think I was probably 15 or something at the time, still in high school. And I remember Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz were fighting for the first time. Oh, yeah. And me and my cousin, we was watching the Best Damn Sports Show, period. And they was going over a lot of MMA stuff, and they was going to show that fight. And I remember watching one of the fights, and they were like, oh, he's got a triangle. Man, that's beautiful jiu-jitsu. And I'm like, okay, so this is jiu-jitsu. So, and I remember, since I seen the triangle, it's the only thing I knew. So me and my cousin, we would just practice that move back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And even the first day that I went into my MMA gym that I started training at, we was doing some grappling, and I was going with a blue belt, a little bit bigger than me and everything. And I remember I triangled him and I subbed him, and he was pissed. He was like, where you train at? And I'm like, nowhere, bro. Man, this is my first day. He's like, bullshit. You train somewhere. And I'm like, dude, I swear I don't train nowhere. I seen that move on TV and I practice it. So I would definitely say jiu-jitsu.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I was the same way, man. I was freaking scrapping in backyards with my friends trying to practice submissions and moves. Once I saw it, like, it was like an epiphany for me once I found out about MMA, really, like right around the Chuck Liddell era, when I was probably like 7th, 8th grade. And when I was younger, and I know Mike, I'm not sure about you, but I'm sure it was much of the same. Being a big WWE guy when you're young and you thought that those dudes were the real fighters, and you're like, oh, this kicks ass. Like, I'm going to be in the WWE one day. You know, I can't wait to do that. So then to find out, like, it's fake when you're a little older, you're like, oh, that sucks. And then figured out about UFC, found that out. And yeah, literally was hooked and dead set on becoming a martial artist ever since I saw that. And I was like, wait, submissions are real? No way. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was 100% me, man. Back in my day when I was a kid, I didn't miss a Nitro and I didn't miss a Monday Night Raw. I was flipping back and forth. I would start watching Nitro because it came on at 7 o'clock, and then at 8 o'clock, I would start to switch back and forth, you know. And that was my life growing up. You know, I watched football. I loved the New Orleans Saints. So I watched football and I watched wrestling. And then my mom and the rest of my family, they'd always rent the UFC events from Blockbuster. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did.
Man, you're not lying about flipping back and forth between Nitro and Raw, dude. I mean, these kids don't know, man. These kids have no idea. We didn't have no on-demand back then. It's like, you missed it, you know? What's more stressful, man? Like, getting ready to make the walk yourself or getting ready for your son Zayden to make the walk?
Oh, getting ready for my son Zayden for sure. There's nothing like teammates or family members, especially your son or your wife, getting ready to do something. I can make the walk any day a lot easier than them.
Does your wife compete too?
She does. She competes jiu-jitsu. She's actually she's won the IBJJF Master Worlds.
Holy
shit. 2 years in a row.
I'm a coach myself, like a lifelong martial artist. I've competed in every style pretty much of grappling and competed in MMA, cornered dozens of fights. And I'm with you that having to watch your students and like people that aren't you, like where you have less control, it is so much more stressful and just you get way more anxious to watch someone else do it. But I don't have a kid or a wife, so I can't even imagine that. That would be extremely stressful.
Yeah, I think that's the reason why I'm starting to go gray.
Yeah, been there.
It's a lot of stress.
Yes, I hear you. Stress will do it, man. On this podcast, we kind of like to delve into a little bit more than just fighting, so I want to ask you kind of a little fringe question. Is there any beliefs that you have? Like, let's say, do you believe in maybe Bigfoot, UFOs, aliens, ghosts, you know, anything like that that people might not be as receptive to or might be surprised to find out that Kurt Hollibaugh believes? Like, for instance, I believe in all that shit.
Yeah, no, for sure. I feel like there's definitely ghosts, or they have to be ghosts. And as far as like aliens, we there's no way we can be the only life form in this universe. There's got to be something else out there, you know. So I would definitely say that there's another world somewhere where humans, or you might not even call them humans, I don't know, you can call them aliens. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely, you know, something else out there for sure.
Are you a hunter in Louisiana? Because, I mean, there's a lot of stories I hear come out about, like, different sightings around that area.
I don't really do a bunch of hunting. Not anymore. When I was a kid, I used to do a lot of hunting. Me and my son, we do a lot of fishing. We just find some little back creeks, rivers, and we'll kayak or walk them for miles.
Any unexplained stories from the wilderness?
Well, not UFO-related, but, man, I run across freaking monster size snakes, hogs, coyotes. I thought I was about to get attacked by the freaking wolf off of Twilight one time. Freaking the biggest coyote I've ever looked like a monster wolf was walking. I'm in a kayak and he starts walking across a creek and I'm like, Jesus Christ, like just stay over there. I don't have any. I'm on my kayak with a paddle. I'm gonna have to fight this wolf with a paddle.
Dude, wolves, people have no idea how freaking big wolves are until, like you said, you're standing by one. They are huge.
For sure. But other than that, just some wild wilderness stuff, I guess you can say. But nothing crazy.
I'm a big outdoors guy myself. I like going and seeing where I can find out there snakes, birds, you know, reptiles. Mm-hmm. I'll definitely want to ask you, as a martial artist and a warrior in life, basically, what do you... where do you draw the line on what animals you can take in a fight to the death and ones that you know you're fucked against? Because I'm sure that crosses your mind being out there as it does mine.
Well, I almost had to fight some dogs one time. But I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't want to fight any big animal. I don't like my chances.
Yeah.
I would fight a dog if I had to, though, man. I thought I was going to fight two German Shepherds one time. I used to install alarms, and I was working on this lady's cameras, and they had like a big pool house, and they had two big ass German Shepherds, and they had them locked up, where their cleaner must have let them out as I was walking past the pool. And dude, they come at me, and I had two thoughts, and I just had a brand new phone. I'm like, I can jump in this pool, or I gotta fight the dog. And I was ready to fight the dog. And thank God I didn't have to.
Damn, them phones are too expensive.
I have a couple of scares with German Shepherds myself, and yeah, man, they're terrifying dogs, to be honest. I'm not one to really be afraid of animals, but the way they run up defensively, like, I knew a kid who had one, and it was a hardcore guard dog. It might have been all bluff, mm-hmm. but I wanted nothing to do with that. Like, can you bring the dog upstairs if I'm going to come in? I don't even want to be near him. And only German Shepherds, dude. Like, I have a healthy respect and borderline fear for them.
There's a reason why the police use them, you know?
For real.
Hey, if you could visit anywhere in the world, like you and your family go on vacation anywhere in the world that you haven't been to already, where would that be?
If I can take my family and go on like a vacation, I'll probably go to like Hawaii or something. If you had to ask me a place where I would like to fight that I've never fought before, I would probably say Japan.
Mm.
Oh yeah, that'd be awesome.
Different fight culture over there, right? It seems like they're much more appreciative and respectful.
Yeah, I go back to old pride style.
Right. Yeah, old pride style. Exactly. I like hearing a lot of those old guys talk about how the Yakuza ran that and everything. And it's like, man, totally different world, man. So you got a fight coming up against Trey Ogden.
Yeah, I think we got about 10 weeks or something like that, Trey Ogden. Finally, you know, like, I've been waiting patient. UFC hit me up earlier this week and said, hey, you want this fight? And I said, hell yeah.
And you've won, what is this? You won six straight, yeah?
Yeah, something like that, either five or six. My last loss is actually like Thiago Moises on the UFC Brazil card in 2019 before COVID hit.
Yeah.
That was my last loss. So, yeah, so I think five straight, and then like a grappling match or something like that.
Yes, but, six straight. The grappling was Scott Phillips. That's what I counted that one. Yeah, that's a damn good run, though, dude. I mean, shit. Your second fight, you fought Phil Daru. That's nuts, dude. Like, he only did MMA for a handful of fights, right?
Yeah, he did. And like, back when I fought him, I mean, nobody really knew who he was back then, or I don't know if he had all of his stuff he was doing. But yeah, shortly after that, you know, he started being like the head strength conditioning for guys at like America Top Team, Dustin Poirier, and a bunch of big time fighters from South Florida.
I'm glad you mentioned Dustin Poirier, because that's another Louisiana boy. He is, I think he's a few years younger than you, but have your guys' careers, or have you guys ever crossed paths at all?
For sure. Me and Dustin, we were fighting on the same local cards down here. We've even fought some of the same guys. And I want to say he fought his last amateur fight the night I fought my fourth amateur fight. And then the guy he fought that night, I wound up fighting pro later on. So, yeah, he had a few more fights than me. So he went pro a little bit earlier and, you know, of course, wind up going to WEC and then to the UFC and doing all the things he done. But yeah, man, we've been around each other quite a bit. When he was still here in Louisiana, went and trained with him, you know, back in the day before I made it to the UFC and stuff. But yeah, I still see him here and there at some local shows.
Getting back to Chandler and McGregor, if that fight ever happens, dude, do you like Coach Chandler, or what do you think happens?
I do, man. I got to go with Chandler. I see how hard he works. I see how much I really think he deserves that win, especially, you know, because I know he wants to fight. But, you know, being that he's fighting Conor, he wants that fight. So, you know, he probably held out a little way longer than he wanted to. But I do think that fight is finally set, and I think he's finally going to get his chance, and I think he's going to be victorious.
And they're talking about 185 with that, right?
That's what they're talking about. Me personally, I think it's still going to end up at 170. If it does end up at 185, I don't think it benefits either one more than the other. And if I did have to say one that it would benefit, I think it would maybe benefit Chandler a little bit more, because one of the things Chandler actually told us when he was in the house is he's been the size he's been his entire career versus Conor just trying to bulk up to that size that he's at now. So a point that he kind of made is, you know, how is that going to affect Connor if he fights? You know, will that affect him at all? Maybe, maybe not. But Connor's not really used to packing around the muscle and the size that he is versus Chandler being that way or that size his entire career. So Chandler said, I don't care what weight is that, you know. Chandler looks like he's a little smaller than Connor, but I think in reality it probably weigh about the same. So should be good.
We like being around a spaz like Connor. Just being around that fucking nut. What was that like?
It was crazy, man. Connor, that's one of my number one questions that I get asked by everybody now. It's like, hey, how's Connor McGregor? And I'm like, man, he's the same as you see him on TV. I mean, there's times he's cool. You know, there's times where he'll sit back and he'll just be like one of the regular guys. And then there's time he goes in character Connor McGregor to where he's running around being a hooligan. So, yeah, Connor's Connor. I don't think it's really an act. I just think that's him. He can be cool if he wants, and he can be the hooligan if he wants to.
Maybe it depends on what he's taking in that day.
Yeah, right.
100%.
What is the single biggest piece of best advice you ever received in the fight
game? I don't know. That would be a hard one. I'm sure Chandler gave me a bunch of it. Whether I can think of it off the top of my head, you know, I'm not sure. But I will say this. And I want to say Desmond Green might have told me this one time, because it was when I was in Russia for a fight. And, man, it was one of the hardest weight cuts I've ever had to do to get to 145 pounds. And Desmond was like, man, just because you can make the weight don't mean you should fight at the weight. Because Desmond had already – he was a 45er too, and he went up to 55. And, I fought 55, 45 back and forth quite a few times, and I've always loved 55. And my only loss at the time was to Pat Healy when I stepped up on Strikeforce. So I'm like, yeah, man, I'm going back to 55. So actually I went back to 55 after that, and then wind up having to go back to 45 for the contender series, but shortly left 45 again and stayed up, been at 55 ever since.
Well, shit, man. I look forward to your fight coming up. It's what is it, March 23rd, yeah?
Yeah, March 23rd, Las Vegas. Supposedly at the moment it's in the UFC Apex, but I don't know for sure.
Do you like fighting in the Apex, or would you prefer, you know, a regular fight in a stadium?
I think I would prefer a regular fight without, you know, a big crowd. I get a lot of energy from the crowd, but, you know, I've had some of my best fights with no crowds, like Contender Series and, you know, the Ultimate Fighter. So I don't think it really matters. And it really doesn't matter to me. I think as long as my family can go, I'll be fine. But if I had to pick, I would pick a big card somewhere, T-Mobile or something.
Dude, if there was an audience for that Jason Knight fight, they would have been going ballistic, dude. I mean, yeah, it takes a lot away, I think, you know.
I got a bit of a MMA conspiracy, if you will. Have either of you guys heard of Khabib possibly coming back now?
I seen something. He was training, and somebody was saying something about him maybe coming back, but I don't know if that's 100% true. I feel like Khabib's one of those guys that kind of makes decisions or something like that and just 100% stands by it.
Yeah, he seems like a man of conviction.
So Chael just put something out there, and this involves one of my good training partners and friends, Bilal Muhammad, who I feel is like at the center of a conspiracy. He's getting blackballed and has been the number one contender, in my opinion, for a little bit for welterweight, and they were supposed to announce him versus Leon, and they still haven't. So Chael was speculating that they haven't announced the Leon versus Bilal fight because they're saying that Khabib is thinking about coming in and trying to snag the 170 belt from Leon and then vacate it so that Islam can go up and win it. And exciting as it would be to see Khabib come back, I don't want to see Bilal get fucked any longer. He deserves that title shot.
Yeah, for sure, man. How crazy would that be, though?
Yeah, nuts.
I mean, that's like layer upon layer. Yeah, that would be, if that plays out like that, dude, you heard it here first, right? I mean, that's crazy. Yeah, sure. But thanks for doing this, dude. I know that you're busy. As you said, you got businesses, family, kids, wife. So you're the man, dude. I've always been a fan of you. I appreciate you doing this. Are you active on social media, Instagram, Twitter? Where could people get a hold of you, follow you at?
Yeah, I am active on Instagram, probably the most. Facebook, Kurt the Hurt Halaba is my Instagram handle. Also started doing a podcast with some friends called The Contender and The Pretenders on YouTube. So you guys can check that out. And yeah, man, I do my best to keep everybody posted on my Instagram.
Well, thank you so much, brother, and good luck with the Trey Ogden fight.
Yep, I appreciate you guys.
So that was Kurt the Hurt Hollabaugh. He's got a fight coming up March 23rd against Trey Ogden. And I think he beats Trey Ogden pretty handily. And so do 71% of the people on Tapology who participate in that kind of thing. So what do you think, man?
Well, I got to say, that's a great nickname. Mm-hmm. Nickname is an important part of a fighter's alter ego, if you ask me. But hell yeah, great great talking with a fellow martial artist. I'm a fan of these conversations. I love hearing stories and perspectives from other lifelong warriors who walk the fucked up beaten path that it is to basically dedicate your life to getting hurt and hurting other people and everything that comes with it. I'm really going to try and pull the weirdness out of some of our MMA and martial arts guests the best that I can. Give them the chance to tell some crazy stories and, you know, get it off their chest.
What I liked about this conversation was Kurt had a lot of information and a lot of stories about, you know, whether it is his friend Jason Knight, who he fought in the semifinals of Tough 31, whether it was some of his early days in the local scene with Dustin Poirier, whether it was his coach, Michael Chandler, or you asked him some stuff on McGregor. So he had a lot of good insight on a lot of top people currently in the UFC and in the sport of mixed martial arts. So that was kind of cool to get that unique firsthand perspective too. You know, not every episode is going to be super hardcore conspiracy driven. We try to see where their level is, and some people are more receptive to it, you know, some people aren't. But he definitely sounded open to a lot of things. He just didn't have any firsthand stories, and there's nothing wrong with that. But still, a good conversation. And I think I forgot what I was going to say.
I think we're bringing the chill just as much as we're bringing the conspiracy.
There you go. Yeah, you got to, right? You got to have a little yin with the yang, right?
Absolutely.
Everything can't always be, well, I take that back. Growing up, I always wore black. You know,
same.
It's like, don't you have, it's like, yeah, but fucking black's just, I don't know.
I was the jeans in the summer and a fucking winter hat skateboarding around. I don't know what the fuck I was thinking.
Yeah, man, I did the jeans and concert t-shirts all through high school, bro.
Absolutely. I mean, the 2000s heavy metal fashion was a funny time. I still got plenty of my metal shirts.
Yeah, I have a few too. A couple of them still fit, which is really surprising. Although I have been losing a little bit of weight, so maybe not so much. But yeah, I think the first time we got together for the podcast and recorded, I was wearing Marilyn Manson Smells Like Children shirt, right? Or no, I lie. I was wearing the Marilyn Manson Portrait of an American Family shirt, right?
Yeah, man. A new metal shirt ain't gonna pass my attention by.
Dude, I'm sorry, but I hold Manson's first couple albums up against, you know, a lot of shit that, you know, he gets a bad rap, and some of it maybe is for right reasons, but those first couple albums, particularly Portrait of an American Family, dude, I'm telling you, that fucking album still stands a test of time. Great, great album.
I digress. Much more of a Slipknot and a...
me too, yeah.
Limp Bizkit and a Korn guy when I was younger than Marilyn Manson personally. I was never into him. I actually was at one of the Mayhems where he was the headliner and Slayer was the co-headliner, and I left before Marilyn Manson. I left when Slayer was done, so I gave him the cold shoulder as a metal fan.
No, I hear you. I hear you, dude. I liked all those other bands too. You know, I did. I liked Slipknot, Limp Bizkit, Korn. I was there too. Funny you say that about dipping out before the head act. I did that once. It was at you know, they would always do the big fest. What was the one that Rockstar did? I think it was like the Mayhem Tour or something.
Yeah, man.
It was a big fest, and Seven Dust was there, not Chevelle, I think 3 Days Grace. There was a few bands that were good, particularly Seven Dust, a couple other bands I was there to see, and the headliner was Avenged Sevenfold. And I dipped out before Avenged Sevenfold because I'm not a huge fan. I mean, they have a couple songs that I dig, but I'm not. I think they're super overrated, dude. What do you think about Avenged Sevenfold?
Yeah, I mean, when I was probably in like seventh grade or something, when they were first coming out with Bat Country was everywhere and shit. I was a little into it. I didn't really get too far down. I think just that first album, I always kind of thought they were corny. My younger brother was big into them at a point.
Yeah, it's like radio metal, you know?
Definitely. I like how like nerdy and fucking diverse the metal fan base is, and like people could be nerds about anything, like fantasy football and shit. People act like that ain't nerdy when you're sitting there going stat machine and like being so worried and knowing everything about it. Just because it's about sports don't mean you're not a fucking nerd. And metal has some of the biggest nerds I've ever seen when it comes to breaking down subgenres and on their first album this that. But like, it's so accurate though. You can go so far down the metal fandom, but yeah, I mean, I'm one of them.
Dude, 100%. I'm a little older than you, but it probably is the same. Growing up, calling someone like a nerd or a dork, that was an insult. Like, there was no like cool backhand to it. Like, oh, like, you know, but you could, that's endearing too. But nowadays, it's almost like it's endearing, right? Like, if I say, dude, you're such a fucking, you're a dork for that. It's almost like I'm giving you a compliment now, you know?
Yeah. Isn't it interesting too that liking, like, you know, comic books or superheroes and like shit like that, games or whatever, was more of like, yeah, like you fucking nerd, you fucking virgin, like that type of shit. Except now it's like the most normie thing ever is like being a Marvel fan, one like a DC fan and the superhero films and shit. It's like the trendy modern thing, just like when westerns was a big thing and sci-fi was a big thing, superhero and like nerd movies and shit is the mainstream. So I'm sure the guys who were mocked for liking that stuff back in the day or thought that they were original or cool or yeah, maybe they were bullied, to see it now be embraced by everyone has got to be a little annoying.
Tell me about it, bro. Do you know what the biggest like mind fuck for me along those lines is?
What's that?
Growing up, as I've said a few times on different shows, I was a big Dungeons & Dragons fan. Still a fan, but you know, growing up, huge fan. It was the furthest thing from cool or popular. But nowadays, I want to say maybe the last 6-7 years, Dungeons & Dragons is like fucking mainstream. And to me, that blows my fucking mind. I mean, we had Brian Snotty on here. He's talking about growing up in the 80s, the Satanic Panic, and parents wouldn't even let their kids fucking read a Dungeons & Dragons book. And now we're in 2024, and I think really since like 2016, 2017, it's been kind of mainstreamed and popularized. And it's just, you know, me being someone who got into Dungeons and Dragons in second edition and now here it is in fifth. It's just, yeah, it's weird how things kind of ebb and flow throughout time. Similarly to like how fashions come back in style. 90s fashion and 90s things are really chic now. They're really popular now.
Let's bring back the giant JNCO jeans.
Yeah, you remember those? The JNCOs, the Z Cavaricis?
That shit is hilarious. Trip pants.
Dude, you were a skater, right?
The JNCOs and the giant fucking Osiris shoes, the puffy skate shoes. Dude. I was a puffy skate shoe fan for sure.
Dude, what were the name of the shoes that had the built-in grind plate?
Oh, wow.
Do you remember those?
Yeah, the grinding shoes. I have no idea.
Dude, I had friends that would like have them at school and we'd be like walking on the curb outside the sidewalk and all of a sudden they just run and slide across the curb. And it was like, growing up skating, if you skateboarded growing up, you were kind of a rebel. And like, the main thing was rollerblading was like a big thing. Not like super like dorky rollerblading, but you know, it was like aggressive street rollerblading was coming up. But there was those handful of dudes that were like, those are the fucking super cool kids. They're skateboarders, dude.
That kind of makes me think we need to get some fucking skaters on here, because I say it all the time. Like, it does breed a certain type of mentality in person, because to do some trick or do some fucking stairs or grind or like some shit that you've never attempted, there's really no progression or way to, you know, do it other than to journey into the unknown and just fucking do it. You take the risk and you do it. Mm-hmm. Like, there's something to that mentality. You gotta have balls.
In my younger years, I tried skateboarding a few times, and not a one time did it work out well.
I was not very good either. I was heavier, not like super fat, but chubbier kid, and I was not like super coordinated, and I was limited. I had fun. I could kickflip. I could do some stairs, but all my friends were infinitely better than me. It was a rough time.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but we didn't even call our friends like a friend group back then. I hear that, and I think that's just the fucking stupidest thing I ever heard. My friend group. You mean your friends? Like, what do you do? Why are you adding words? Skating took a hurt in my friend group when we got our licenses. A lot of dudes stopped skating.
Oh, yeah. It was the means of transportation. I will also have to credit the skate park, and just being a young fucking little unsupervised skateboard punk is where I definitely got my true fighting background from. From being in wrestling as a kid and just scrapping at the fucking skate park with other little asshole kids all the time.
To be a kid, if you could put yourself back in the mental state of Tom Higgins when he's 13 years old skating, it's like, you ain't got a care in the world. It's like, oh, maybe you got to go to school on Monday or some shit. And God, I think about that sometimes. And, you know, ignorance really is bliss. I can't even imagine going back and telling the 12 or 13 year old me the shit that the 43 year old me has been through. It might scare the fuck out of him. So, yeah, I don't know, man. This was fun. This was a good one, dude. Kurt Hollebaugh, good dude. Wish him the best of luck in his next fight. We'll have him on after he gets his hand raised. And we're working on a couple other fighters. As Tom said, we're going to try to get some skaters, all kinds of different people. And as we've said too a couple times already, if you guys have any ideas for guests you'd like to hear us talk with or show topics in general, shoot us an email, conspiracyandchill@yahoo.com. Follow us on all the social medias, Instagram, X, Facebook, and Patreon. We do have the one tier available on Patreon. We're going to be offering more tiers with more extra goodies, more extra content here shortly. But if you did want to support us, I think the tier is $3 a month. That would help us to continue to level up our game and the podcast in all different areas too. And if you want to help out but you don't have the money, don't blame you. You're broke as a joke like Tom and I. Just go ahead and give us a 5-star review on whatever streaming service you're listening to it on. That really does help. What else?
Don't pay to be on your podcast.
Yeah, right. It's definitely a labor of love, my friend.